This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. I'm Roshan Kunnison, and you're listening to Ringgit and Cents, the show that's all about personal finance. So former Prime Minister Dato Sri Najib Razak was hit with quite the tax bill recently, and that seemed to have spurred quite a bit of conversation. Now, to help me break that down, I have in the studio with me Mr. Tanamale, Managing Director of Tanis Tax Consulting Services and current Chairman of Malaysia Tax Research Foundation. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Roshan. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you as well. So, Tane, this tax bill caused quite a bit of spur last week when the IRB slapped an additional 1.5 billion ringgit. Can you help break that down a little bit for all of us?
Yeah, certainly. What the IRB has said is, you know, the money that he has received, which he claims that he has received it as a donation for political reasons, he's received that money. And that's what he's saying, effectively. So I think if I break this down, he's saying it's a donation that he has received. He said three things. He said, one, it is offshore income, which I don't think it's offshore income. Because it's offshore income, then there must have been a business or some kind of an income that has been generated. But he says it's offshore income. But in the law, offshore income, you're not, if you bring it back to Malaysia, it's not taxable.
Right.
Technically, right, but whether it's offshore income or not is debatable. The second point is he says it's effectively received on behalf of his political party, and he's just a holder of that money. And therefore, or the third thing he said in the past is it's a donation. So if it's now, let's get back to the main thing. It's a gift or a donation. Now, if it is a gift or a donation, it should have been given gratuitously with no expectation by the giver for anything in return. And it effectively, and the person who gives that money should be able to support the fact that he has the capacity to give the money. Those right. are a couple of things that has to be actually proven by him. So if he cannot, and if it is in any way related to his employment income or any of the offices he's holding, then it becomes taxable income because it is that office or the employment income is exercised in Malaysia. Effectively, you're performing that work, and whether it is clean money or not so clean money, but if it is related in tax, we don't make a distinction, unfortunately, Roshan, between legal and illegal. You can tax all income, whether it arises legally or illegally in Malaysia. So that is what he has to answer. But the revenue, too, has a job cut out for it. You know, they have to prove that, in fact, it is actually income. If he's able to show that it actually the person donating it didn't actually, it is a donation, you know, to the political party or to him, and they can show, you know, at the end of the day, they have the capacity. So the revenue has to then come in and say that is not donation, it is actually income that is related to one of the sources of income he has, whether it's employment or otherwise. So in that question, both sides have their work cut out. It is not that easy. And on top of that, the revenue, you know, the chief executive officer at that time said about, I think, 2-3 years ago, he said it was gift and confirmed. Now they've changed their position and they're saying it is not gift and they have actually slapped a tax bill on him. So they too, when this matter goes to court, it's going to be debated. So both sides, you know, have a case, and both sides have work cut out for them. So it's not easy going for either party. So it's the issue is not absolutely clear cut at the moment. Both sides, you know, have to prove their positions.
So it is sounding increasingly complicated. It's not a clear cut. Donations are taxable or not taxable. A lot of intention is counted in the whether it gets taxable or not.
Evidence is going to matter,
right? So That's one thing for the very big cases, but I think this causes a lot of anxiety and uncertainty amongst maybe the rest of us who aren't so sure. Like, is this donation taxable? Is it not taxable? What do I declare or not?
Roshan, I think for the ordinary man who actually say the mother gives the son the gift, it's now you got to go one step further in light of the fact that the revenue authorities, IRB, is taking the position that possibly most gifts will be taxable. I don't agree with it. The position that they should be, you know, so what people should do, anyone who is giving a gift should actually, you know, put it in writing. Just put a note to them that I'm actually giving the sum of, you know, money to my son, and this is a donation, you know, this is a gift from him. And therefore, I have the capacity to give this money. I have the sources of funds to give him the money and this money. And therefore, it will remain non-taxable because as long as the party is identified, who is the giver, who is the person who is receiving it. And unfortunately, I would just say, little bit of extra work is needed. Put in a little piece of paper to say, I have given this money to you as a donation. And if your intention is there clearly, no one can disturb that, you know. So I'm very comfortable with it, but just document it for the sake of, you know, clarity, so that 3-4 years down the line, the matter is, you know, will not become an issue to you.
So is there a clear distinction? Okay, so one of the things you've said here is, a donation, it's counted as a donation if you know who the money is coming from and if there's no expectation in return.
In return, there is no, you know, the person who receives it doesn't have to give you anything in return, in kind or in any other way. He doesn't give you anything. He receives it, he keeps it. It's like a goodwill payment. It's a payment made, you know, out of love and kindness, you know, and you make that clear. So if someone gives that, even if a third party gives it to you and say, I expect nothing, I want to give you a gift, you know, it's fine.
And that's when it's not taxable.
Yeah, as long as you identify both parties, the giver and the recipient, and, you know, we are not hidden away. And even if it's coming from overseas, you got to make sure the overseas party identifies himself. And he also perhaps tells you why he's giving you the donation. Maybe he loves you. He wants to give you out of, you know, he has a nice heart and he just feels you've done something good for the rest of the world. So he makes a donation to you for the good cause that you may be pursuing.
So this sounds like the IRB has quite a lot cut out for itself. It has to go out of its way to prove that there was nothing expected in return for the money that
but
was...
But IRB will take initially, you know, in practice what the IRB does is, you know, this expects you to show that. And once you have shown that proof, then the ball is in the IRB's court. Because it's not easy. Once you have proven and you've given them the documentary evidence, you know, then the job is, you know, there's a tough job for the IRB. You know, it has to then come up. Then only its job begins.
So the first responsibility is upon us, the taxpayers, to show our documentation.
Yeah.
So that's why we got to keep our documents in line, everything filed appropriately. But when it comes to documentation, how far back should we be keeping this? How much of our documents should we be keeping?
Legally speaking, 7 years, you must keep the documentation, you know, because if you don't, you fail under the law. You know, there's a requirement, you know. But now that, you know, the tax authorities, with the exchange of information that's occurring around the world, because if you have bank accounts in overseas, in Singapore, London, Melbourne, etc., properties and insurance policies and all that, they're beginning to just ask you, how come you have so much wealth there, 30, 50, 100 million, whereas you're only showing me 1 million ringgits of income over the last 5 or 7 years? So even though, you know, you may have to keep records beyond this, although the authorities and the others, minimum requirement is 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
But my advice is, with the tax authorities, it's better to keep documentation as long as possible, because issues like this have just come up because of the exchange of information between the countries that have just started this year. So if you have that, it becomes a little easier to prove your position. Otherwise, it becomes a lot more difficult, you know. So keeping documentation for the tax authorities around the world, I don't only mean in Malaysia, because every other authority is asking the same question, because all this is initiated by the OECD and endorsed by the United Nations, you know, because of the money laundering and the kind of issues that are happening. So the important thing is keep it, but minimum 7 years.
Mm.
Why? Because the tax authorities, if it is, you know, they can raise assessments or tax bills going back for 5 years for income tax issues, 7 years for transfer pricing. For individuals, we only need to worry for 5 years mostly.
Okay.
For 5 years is a minimum, but sometimes if they can show that there is, you know, fraud or willful negligence or willful default negligence, then there is no end to it. They can go back even 25 years. You know?
Okay.
There's no end. Once they can break that barrier, they can go back beyond the 5 years. But most of us are not, you know, we are not, you know, we will not be charged with fraud or willful negligence. So a minimum of 5 years is needed. But to support the 5 years, you better keep for 7 years minimum. Full records.
So better safe than sorry here. So 7 years.
Yes.
Let's do that. And how likely are we to be audited? I know it's something that we all worry about, but at the same time, it's not something that's very common unless you hit certain markers. Could you help shed some light here?
Yeah. Again, it's a very simple thing, because the system now with, you know, the Inland Revenue Board is very, very savvy. They have, you know, far more sophisticated IT systems, and with the artificial intelligence, and they have actually incurred, they have actually spent a lot of money on that. So the system itself will pick up. What happens is if you haven't, you know, if there are, you know, fluctuations in your income, if there are, for example, certain years and suddenly you declare a new source of income, it goes up. And another year, for example, your income completely comes down and, you know, you don't have much income at all. Those fluctuations will be picked up by the system and automatically brings you in for audit. But generally, for individuals, you're not, you know, you won't be called in very regularly like companies for audits. It's not common. Unless there are significant fluctuations or they receive information. For example, if you're renting houses and so they realize from the companies that pay you there is rental payments and you haven't declared it because there's automatic matching going on. They also match other sources of information against your income. You know, they have information on your, you know, from various, you know, for example, your various credit ratings. Wherever they can buy data, they're also buying data from external sources. So there's a lot of matching. They also match, for example, if you buy an expensive car, all those companies are actually giving returns. You buy, even if you buy expensive, you know, the other expensive items, each of these guys are asked to prepare returns and send returns of who the customers are. And from there, they match up and say, how come you're able to buy a $800,000 or a $1.5 million car or a $1.5 million valuable? And there you are. You know, you're declaring $200,000 in income for the whole year. Where did you get this kind of money? Automatically, the system picks you up and brings you in. And so that's where it's happening. But currently the system, most of the work in the last 2-3 months or few months is actually picking up the people who have offshore bank accounts.
Mm-hmm.
They are being matched automatically and they're being called in. So you see, if you at the moment the revenue has sent out about 5 million letters to everyone. That's a general letter asking you to come in for a special voluntary disclosure program. But approximately, I think about 90,000 people have been called in or even more are being called in when you have differences with your foreign bank accounts and your net, what I call net worth. If your net worth is so much, 20 million, 50 million, 200 million versus what you have declared in Malaysia, you're being automatically being called in and asked to explain. Those guys are actually being looked at and maybe audited, likely to be audited. But at the moment, it's voluntary disclosure.
Okay, and we'll continue this conversation in a little bit, get more into the special volunteer disclosure program and talk more about this offshore banking and whether you need to worry about that. This is Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9, thanks for staying with us here on Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Now, today we're taking a look at taxes and we're going to continue our discussion here with the Special Volunteer Disclosure Program and Offshore Financial Assets. Still in the studio with me is Tan Emele, Managing Director of Tanes Tax Consulting Services and current Chairman of Malaysia Tax Research Foundation. So Tane, who should be worried about the SVDP and this talk about offshore financial assets?
I think you shouldn't be worried about the SVDP. SVDP is actually an opportunity for people who have not declared their past income to come clean. It's a fantastic chance. Really, these people have been, you know, for years, maybe they have income that they should have declared in Malaysia that they haven't. This is a great opportunity. So the people who should use this opportunity, in my view, should be those who are going to be picked up anyway. I mean, there's two sets. Let's look at the normal domestic Malaysians, you know, who have rental income in particular or any other income. Like, for example, you may be giving speeches, you're earning money, or you're doing, you know, work that's outside your office hours and you're earning some money out of that. All that money that has been undeclared in the past, you may have received it in cash, you may have received it in check. So if it is rental income, etc., time to actually bring that in and actually declare that. If you declare that, your penalty rates, you know, now from June to September is only going to be 15%. In fact, this week, the government has just extended. It was supposed to end in June. Now they've extended this program, the SVDP, the Special Voluntary Disclosure Program, up to 30th September. After 30th September, you declare, it'll be a normal audit and you'll pay at 45% penalty or more. So better come in early. So if that's the case, they come in. And the second thing is, the greatest benefit of this SVDP is they are not, the tax authorities are not going to ask you 1,001 questions, you know, because they will take it in good faith. The whole basis of this SVDP is good faith on both parties, by the IRB, Inland Revenue Board, and yourselves, the taxpayer. You will need to justify how you built up the number, what is the missing number, but they're not going to go in and audit, which means checking your vouchers and et cetera, et cetera. They take what you declared as reasonable and actually in good faith. So there's a real opportunity to close the matter very quickly rather than going on for months or weeks. The bigger group that needs to be very concerned about are those who have actually the well-off people, really the higher end of our society, who have a lot of wealth, but mainly overseas. They are in Hong Kong, Singapore, Melbourne, London, everywhere. There are property, basically financial assets is the number one. Because all your balances, whether it's insurance policies, whether it is bank accounts, whether it is bonds, whether it is actually mutual funds, any form of that, have all come back. All that information has come back from more than about 58 countries or 57 countries, and more than 100 over countries are exchanging information. It's just a matter of time. So if the 31st December 2017 information has come in by September, it is in the hands of the Inland Revenue. They're calling up people one by one. Approximately, I think 80,000 or 100,000 people will be soon called up, these wealthy individuals. They are the people who need to be concerned, because your net worth outside, if you are sitting with accounts, you know, that shows that you have net worth about 100 million or 30 million or 40 million Sing dollars or, you know, pounds all over the, you know, in different UK, etc., in Hong Kong. Now, you've got to compare yourself against what income did you declare. If the differential is a lot, then you must be able to show that the difference is really because you've had capital gains, which is not taxable, or you have inheritance. Previously, you've received money that was already overseas years ago, donkeys years ago, maybe 30, 40 years ago or 20 years ago, and this was not taxable amounts. Or you've received gifts, which you can actually prove that these are gifts. So there are also... Your money must have been, you know, may have been built up over the years legitimately. But the problem is now you've got to go back to the records and be ready to prove. There's a lot of bit of hard work, but get it done. And if there is a discrepancy, you can bring it in and they will not question you further. Whereas if they were to pick you up after September, then they're likely to ask you what I call a capital statement, which is extremely troublesome, because they're going to ask you for the last 5 years. You know, they're going to ask you to go through all your bank accounts, all the movements in your bank account, which means all the entries above, say, 50,000 or 100,000. And they're going to ask you, you know, to explain what it is. They're going to call up your credit cards, every one of your credit cards you've used. And they'll ask you to show, you know, there'll be an income and expenditure. There will be each year they're going to look at your net worth. And if your net worth has grown, you've got to prove that it's not income. It is actually due to other things like capital gains and gift. So that group is certainly the group that must use this SVDP without any doubt. The beauty of this exercise is if you were to give some portion of it and they will accept that you don't have documents, because the benefit of the doubt is given to you and it's done in good faith, they will accept it, you can move on, you've paid some taxes and they're not going to question you. The only time they're going to go back on an SVDP program is if they get new information in the future. They have the right to open your SVDP program, I caution you. So if you don't do your SVDP properly, you run a remote risk of being looked at even more thoroughly in the future. So be careful, do your SVDP carefully.
All right, and now let's bring it back down to the rest of us, maybe not the high flyers out there. What can we do to better file our taxes? What are your key suggestions and advice for us?
I think now 30th April is coming, and if you do e-filing, they'll allow you up to 15th May to file it. And I would recommend, number one, carry on with the e-filing, because no mistakes will be made, because the system automatically checks and auto-corrects the mistakes, you know, number one. Number two, what I would look for is, whatever that you're claiming, make sure you have completeness of documentation. Keep it. Don't throw it away. Please, keep it. The next thing is, I would also make sure you claim all your reliefs, you know, because it's so clear, it's given to you, take advantage of it, of whatever reliefs you're entitled to from the special relief for your sports equipment on your computers, etc. You get 2,500, for example. Take it. Don't lose out any of your benefits. But one point I would make when you file your returns is, don't just depend on the EA form that the employer gives. Because if you have received any other income outside your employment income, or any other income that is actually related to your employment but not disclosed in the EA, please disclose it, like your perquisites, benefits, anything that has been given to you, please disclose it, because that is not the, it is outside the EA, so that tomorrow, 4 years down the line, nobody can question you because you've declared everything. That is for this year's return.
Okay, and on that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Tane. On the show today, I had Tane Mele, Managing Director of Tane's Tax Consulting Services and current Chairman of Malaysia Tax Research Foundation. This was Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.